Welcome back to the second half of the show, Cosmic Horizons, here on NatRadio.com with my special guest, Mr. Michael Bradley. Now, Michael, we were talking a little bit off-air a bit about the Grail's significance in Canada, but before we get to that, now, history makes us believe that King Arthur plays an important role in the Grail's existence. Is this truth or legend?
I have no idea. It's certainly beloved legend. There's probably something to it. What I said in the beginning was that if you view Western history as two sides of a coin, then one side of that coin is very, very old, and it persisted into medieval times, including Arthur, if you want to place him there, 550, 562, when he supposedly died. And yes, he probably intermarried the Romano-Celtic royalty with scions of the great goddess and scions of her messiah son-in-law. For instance, the Druids apparently believed in a teacher of righteousness called Yesu in about 300 B.C. Arthur would have been exposed to this as a Briton.
Right.
What happened after that was that as the Church of Rome established itself and consolidated itself in the Eastern Mediterranean, throughout Britain, southern France along the Garonne River, Aude River corridor, along the Mediterranean coasts and islands, this old legend never really died out, and it began to coalesce and consolidate itself in opposition to the Council of Nicaea, 325 AD roughly. Somewhere between 325 and 700, you have a religion of the Grail, which was very advanced in terms of female rights for the time, for the times, extremely advanced in the arts and the sciences for the times, and this kind of thing. And this was basically in opposition to the Roman Church, which is just establishing itself in the Middle East and in Rome. Now, this Grail religion grew so powerful in southern France that by about 1400, well, must not say 1400 quite yet, by about 1100, there were masses, Roman churches, in which a mass in southern France had not been said in 20 years, because the local religion of the Grail believers, Catharism it was called, in which both men and women could be priests and all that, was so popular it sort of chased the Roman Church out of any competition. Now, that state of affairs lasted until basically 1187 and the loss of Jerusalem by Templars and Grail people who led the First Crusade. Then what happened was the Church of Rome declared what they call the Albigensian Crusade against the heretics of southern France. And this raged until 1244. And thousands of people were killed off in this thing, in this crusade, this religious war, including Templars and whatnot. And finally, the Grail was totally defeated in terms of just military force by the Northern French and the Catholic Church. and the Grail people fled to the fringes of Europe. And from there, they inspired voyages of discovery. In Portugal, they were known as the Knights of Christ instead of the Knights Templar. In Scotland, where they fled, enough Templars arrived there in 1314 to win the Battle of Bannockburn for Robert the Bruce. And they gravitated toward Rosslyn, Scotland, the home of the St. Clairs. So my story picks up with the situation that Henry Sinclair made a voyage across the Atlantic in 1398. Obviously, at least it's obvious to me, maybe not to everybody else, one of the big reasons he made the voyage was to get rid of all the excess Templars and their descendants that had taken refuge with him because they were a political liability to him. So if they could cause another invasion of Scotland, which some of the English were only too willing to do, under the guise of, papal obedience, etc. So he went across the ocean with his entire fleet, which at that time was 13 ships. And he founded a city, and according to him, and a very detailed document known to historians as the Zeno Narrative, he founded a city in what can only be Nova Scotia, and now there's proof of it. The Royal Nova Scotia Museum itself found this proof in 1991, but they haven't let Canadians know about it. Basically, what they found was 68 pieces of metal, two of which resolved themselves into two almost complete parts. The other 60-odd pieces of metal, by analysis at the Slowpoke Nuclear Reactor University of Toronto Chemistry Department, resolved themselves into from 6 to 13 metal pots of Scottish origin that were among the Micmacs as of 1400. So there's no doubt that somebody came around 1400, 1398, when the Zeno Narrative says Henry Sinclair came. Okay, but they came with 500 men. So my Grail Knights of North America covers the fact that where did they go after they landed in Nova Scotia? Obviously, there was too many men just to stay there. So these 500 people explored up toward the Great Lakes and all that kind of thing through five major river routes, which I traced with five Grail-related artifacts, which I photograph, including rock inscriptions, a dam, a carbon-dated dam, a gargoyle of North Scottish workmanship. And my last book, Swords at Sunset, says, okay, eventually, after they had explored Lake Memphremagog area and Quebec, they would have discovered Lake Ontario and then the Falls. And once they saw the Falls, they knew immediately that they had to establish a community above the Falls in order to be able to navigate into the Upper Lakes. And that's what they did. So that's Swords at Sunset. Now, in the process of doing all this, they not only influenced Indian culture, but antagonized it to some great degree. And retribution was not long in coming, and eventually they were wiped out by 1571 or so.
Now, I just sitting here listening, and it's amazing me how the schools, even when I went to school, we were taught nothing about this, because what I read from your book, that Henry Sinclair found a settlement in Nova Scotia a century before Cabot and Columbus actually crossed the Atlantic.
That's correct.
Now, how come none of this is really taught in schools these days?
Well, I'll tell you why. It used to be. When I first went to Nova Scotia in 1964 to attend Dalhousie University in biology. The Royal Nova Scotia Museum had a huge panorama, is that what you call those things, of Henry Sinclair landing in Nova Scotia in 1398. It was accepted. But the problem is, you tug on Henry Sinclair a little bit too much, and everything unravels. I told you about the two sides of the coin. Not only history unravels, not only what the Hanoverians would like us to think about who owns Canada and the Stuarts, but all of Western religion unravels, both sides, just like a sweater. You just tug it a little bit too much. So, as soon as anybody got onto this, and the importance of it, then there was an immense amount of effort to try to suppress it. Because if you do, you have to just rethink all of Western history, especially all of Western religious history, and even a lot of political history.
If I can just add something, I'd never heard of this Henry Sinclair fellow before reading the book, and I mentioned it to a friend of mine from Nova Scotia, and she said that, I said, have you ever heard of this Henry Sinclair guy? Oh, yeah. And her father was a professor at, I think, Dalhousie, mm-hmm. or one of the universities in Halifax, and he was aware of archaeological sites in Nova Scotia that were result of Henry Sinclair's activity. So it's just absolutely fascinating, and I can't believe it's 2006 and some of us are just hearing this for the first time.
Neither could I, by the way.
Well, didn't the Templars form a society called the Freemasonry, and Sinclair actually led this society?
Yes, exactly. Instead of forming a new order of knighthood, as they did in Portugal, they were called the Knights of Christ in Portugal. When they got to Scotland, they didn't form a new order of knighthood. That was getting to be a little bit passé, you might say, anyway. They formed the Order of Freemasonry, and yes, either the oldest or one of the oldest, I forget which, I'm not a Mason, Masonic documents on record list the St. Clairs as hereditary heads of the Masonic movement. I don't know mm-hmm. when that document's dated, but I read about that in the Temple in the Lodge by Michael Béjean.
Now, there is mention from your book, I might have this wrong, that the Grail is really a human lineage of bloodlines and not a symbol, and has been known for centuries after the crucifixion.
Oh, that's right, and centuries before. That's what I'm saying. The Grail is a vessel, something that holds something, but in an allegorical, poetic way. It's a lineage of people that holds the holy blood. Now, what the hell is the holy blood?
Exactly.
Okay, well, it's not necessarily Jesus and Mary Magdalene. It goes back much further than them, okay? And it goes back into the future much later than them. It's a lineage of people who basically at one time pretended to be, or were regarded as, priestesses or whatever, or the Earth Mother herself, okay, and her consort. Now, Sir James Fraser and Robert Graves have written about this ad nauseum in The Golden Bough, respectively, and The White Goddess. And that's what this holy bloodline is. That is to say, people who are regarded as priestesses or actual goddesses on Earth of that, and their consorts and babies, whatever. That's all.
And that just about explains what the real, I guess, Grail really is. It's the human lineage.
It's a human lineage, and the Grail, as a vessel, as I said, at the beginning of the show, at the top of the hour, the any vessel, the original vessel, was the womb of the Earth Goddess, which regenerated everything, both biologically and spiritually.
Now, from, we're just going to about ready to wrap up the show, Michael. Now, from your book, I've read it, and it's quite a very interesting and provocative book, and I'm just wondering whether the Grail is here in Canada.
Yes. Let's put it this way. There's a very good chance that at least part of the Grail was in Canada, okay? That is to say, some Templar treasure and certain descendants of these people, yes, are in Canada. I happen to know that. And at one time I was going to do a book on it.
But you hope you don't face the same thing that you faced on Swords of Sunset.
No, I actually faced a different thing.
Oh.
Everybody was all happy for me to do the book.
Yes.
And the closer I got to writing it, the more they clammed up.
Well, just about ending the show now, Nick. Is there anything you'd like to say to Michael and Jolie?
Joel.
Joel, yeah.
Joel.
Yes. Well, maybe Michael does have some connections to some of these people here in North America. Someone maybe very dear to him. But we'll leave that to Michael to discuss maybe on another show.
Or another
show.
Book.
Or another
or a
book,
movie.
You know, or a movie, possibly. Mm-hmm. You know. But I'm really happy that he did agree to come on our show.
Yes.
Because it is important to expose our listeners to other ideas. Okay. Whether they're unpopular or not, that's not important. Okay. It's for our listeners to decide, right? But, we do have critical minded or thinking listeners out there. And it's up to them to decide. But it is important for us not to suppress this truth as some other people like publishers and things like that have done. And, to make the truth available, you know. If it turns out to be that, there's certain elements that are not accurate or maybe even wrong, okay, that's fine. But that's the whole idea of having a show like this. Because like in a university environment, you have to be able to expose people to new ideas. Have them others challenge these ideas in a debate, and then truth will advance this way. And so I'm very happy and very thrilled that Michael and Jolie here were able to come in person to our studio to express his opinions and opinions based on 25 years of scholarly research, mm-hmm. You know. And hopefully we'll get him back on again on a future show because he's an author of many, many books, okay? And 1 hour of air
Isn't
show time
enough.
is doesn't do justice, actually.
Well, right. Thank you very much, Michael. And by the way, you listeners out there, if you email me, cosmicto@yahoo.ca, about tonight's show, I will send you a copy of Michael Bradley's latest book, Swords at Sunset. So my email is cosmicto@yahoo.ca.
Perhaps one should say that it's published by Manor House Publishing of Vancouver,
Absolutely.
Ontario. It's available through Chapters Indigo, but you have to make sure that you ask for the Manor House edition. Otherwise, you aren't going to get it. Also, if the sales clerk can't find it under Michael Bradley, ask them to look under author Joel Loriel. There's been a mix-up with the computers.
And you have a website, too?
www.michaelbradley.info.
And that's where to get your book.
It can be ordered through there. There is a copy of the order form that can be downloaded, PDF, and then you fax it to Manor House Publishing.
Thank you very much. It's been very interesting talking with you, Michael.
Thank you.
And we hope to get you back when you make that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we can co-star in it.
Yeah.
Actually, there is some movie interest, so.
Oh, that's
it,
good.
It may not be exactly improbable. We'll find out.
Thanks a lot. You've been listening to Cosmic Horizons on the Net Radio Network system. And remember, as always, until next time, someone out there might be watching you. Watch them. Until next time. I see.